What we're doing today is we're going to be going through some of the basic halachot of Pesach. This is really a bikiyut shir. We've talked in the past about bikiyut versus iyun. Bikiyut means you're going through something, a lot of material with not as much depth. Iyun means less material but more depth, thinking about it more. This is really a bikiyut shir. We're going to go through some of the basic halachot. And actually, we're not even really going to get into Pesach. There's so much to do before Pesach that we're going to cover all the pre-Pesach stuff and never actually get to the Seder. Just too much to cover, and also the Seder you can find in any Haggadah will tell you what to do. So I'm not as worried about that. We have to talk about the month of Nisan itself, talk about Bedikat Chometz, Mechirat Chometz, Bir Chometz, Bitul Chometz, lots of things to talk about. Each one of these topics alone could take, you know, hours, but we have to cover everything in an hour or less. So actually, first of all, if people could move closer, everyone should be as close as they possibly can. I don't want to have to shout, and I want you to be a part of it. So everyone could please, there's plenty of room over here. So people can move, get close. Don't feel like you have to be so far away. Grab a chair, you know. 6th and 7th grade, by the way, I reserve the right to ask questions based on this on your next quiz or test, if I feel like it. I don't know why that's such a shock. Halacha, I don't know why that's such a shock. Not only do I reserve the right, but I almost guarantee you that I will. So that's a pay attention, write notes kind of announcement. Yeah, that's how it is. Anyway, I would actually like you to learn what I'm saying.
Or the chocolate bar.
Okay, in order to keep things a little more interesting, I will be asking questions throughout the shiur, and I will be offering you candies if you get questions correctly. So that's another incentive. So you have two incentives to actually pay attention to what I'm saying. Number one, points on your next test. Number two, candies if you get things correct. So if you want either candies and or points on your next test, this is a good opportunity for you to stop talking to each other in the back and start paying attention. Thank you. Yes?
What's the big candies
one? We're also waiting for some people to move closer. I was talking a minute ago about how I'd like people to be as close as possible. So I'll actually keep waiting until we have accomplished that goal. Seats over here. So people can get up out of their seats and move to where you'll be closer. I really would like to create as little distance as possible. Okay, there are little candies to throw out this year. The large candy, the very large candy, the largest candy in the room, is rather large. It's a giant bar. It says it right on it. It's a giant bar. That will be for one individual who I call on at the end of the year and ask after I ask a question. Okay, very good. So, you already know what the white ones are for, but Shimmy would like me to tell you that he won Parsha Wars a few weeks in a row and has candies waiting on the table. Okay. So, let's get started. The month of Nisan. A, right? First of all, the first part of this we talked about last week, actually, after davening. We talked about why we don't say Tachanun. We don't say Tachanun during Nisan. Does anyone remember why? Several reasons. Do you have? Yeah, on the recording I can say that everyone's hand is in the air because data can't see. Wow, 40 hands in the air. Not really. Galiza.
One reason is Pesach.
They don't know.
One reason is Pesach.
Pesach is a good one, Elon.
After holidays, it gives us the chance to do the korbanot. So we have to do the korbanot if you missed it. Mm-hmm. So that's the week after. So it's if you missed the korban Pesach, you have to bring it.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Before it's because in like a happy month.
Okay, but I was happier than Nisan, not correct, wasn't
the inauguration.
Right, that's what I was looking for. The first 12 days, the days that we're in right now, are Chanukah HaMishkan. Most of you have learned 6th grade Chumash Midbar with me, and you know that they dedicated the Mishkan in the desert, in Nisan, the first 12 days. So it's a happy time, and so we do not say Tachanun. A couple of other things related to that. Look at the very first halacha on the page. We'll see if we actually get to 60 halacha in 60 minutes. We'll see. Sho'alin behilchot Pesach kodem Pesach 30 yom. There's a halacha. You're supposed to start learning halacha about Pesach 30 days before the holiday. There's a question, we won't go through it now, in Mishnah Berurah and Source 2, whether that applies to all holidays or just Pesach. Is it true for Pesach? Because there's so many halachot, as you can see. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg, what you have in front of you. So many halachot about Pesach. Is that true also for Sukkot? Is that true for Shavuos? Those are questionable, but definitely Pesach, you should really start learning about Hilchot Pesach from a book, from Shiurim. There's so much online, but in general you should know. So start learning 30 days before, and even then you'll find that you probably will not make it to Pesach knowing everything you need to know. But you should at least try 30 days before to start learning Hilchot Pesach. At least we're starting less than a week before, but better than nothing. Okay. Two more things about the month of Nisan. Habachorot, near the end of Source 1 there, Habachorot mit'anin bo be'erev Pesach. The firstborns. Is anyone here a firstborn? Wow. Quite a... Wow. That is a very high percentage of the room. That is a little crazy. Okay. Almost everybody. That's a little weird. Okay. Exactly. 3 years from now, no one in the room. But this year, everyone is. So. Okay. So. Right. But why do firstborns fast? So you all need to fast, except for a provision that I'll get to in a minute. But why should firstborns fast, ideally, on Erev Pesach? Does anyone know why? Out of all of the firstborns in the room. Okay, some of you, that's good. Yehuda.
Because Hashem saved us, he just decided not to kill right. us, and he killed only the just meets him.
Right, very good. He killed
also, the... Yeah. Isn't there a custom that you can just have a party?
Good, we'll get to that in a second. Right, so the basic reason is, that, by the way, there's going to be a rule in this year because there's so much to do in so little time. I will call in one person per question. If they're wrong, I'll give the right answer. If they're right, they get the answer. But I'm not, we don't have time for 35 tries of every question. There's not time. That's just how it'll be. But you were correct anyway, so. Okay, correct. And Yehuda was also correct that some people make a party. So that's sort of true. Some people make a seal. You can get out of the fasting on the... It's not such a serious fast. It's not such a weighty fast in halacha. It's really a minhag. So you're allowed to get out of it by attending a siyum, right? If you go to a siyum, and you'll find in any part of town that you live in, if you look into it, you'll find that there is a siyum being offered. Someone will make a siyum on some gemara that they've just finished, or mishnayot. This shul, Idos, I'm sure the southeast has siyum. So wherever you live, you can probably find a siyum, and you really should, or else fast. But the truth is, there's not that much you can eat anyway.
It's true, you don't eat, you're like...
Right. Girls, the minhag is also do fast. Yes. The minhag is that girls fast. There might be a different minhagim, but that's at least one minhag. You could ask your own child. Okay. There's also, by the way, I didn't fast 2 years ago. Is that true? 3 years ago? But I started fasting 2 years ago. Why is that? What halacha is that based on? So I'm not a bechor, I'm not a firstborn. However, a firstborn under bar mitzvah child makes their father have to fast for them until their bar mitzvah. So technically, you guys don't actually have to fast yet if you're not bar and bas mitzvah. Your father should either fast for you or should attend to see him. Not a bad idea to start if you're like 12. But anyway, technically, until for the next 11 years or so, I'm stuck fasting because of my son. So there you go. Okay. What else do we have over here about Nisan? Okay. Source 3. The bottom of page 1, Source 3. Shabbat shelifnei Pesach karinoto Shabbat hagadol lifnei hanes shana sebo. Right? The Shabbos right before Pesach is called Shabbat HaGadol, Shabbos HaGadol. Does anyone know why? Because of the miracle that happened. Lots of miracles happened around this time of Jewish history. What is being referred to in this halacha? Does anyone know what is being referred to as the great miracle that happened on the Shabbat before Pesach? The original Pesach. Yosef
Chaim. The
Seer Split? No, that's not correct.
No.
That was the one attempt. My apologies. The answer is... See? Save time that way. That's amazing. That's a great policy. The answer is that the miracle was that they took the lambs of the Egyptians, of the Mitzrim, to Shecht. The Egyptians worshipped lambs. Not a very smart idea. Right? Not a very good PR move on the Jews' part, but Hashem told them to do it. They did it. They said, wait, we're going to get killed. Hashem said, don't worry. Sure enough, Hashem was right. They didn't get killed. And it's a tremendous miracle that the Egyptians did not harm us or even lift a finger to us, sacrificing their gods. What?
Didn't they want to?
Didn't they want to? It's not clear. They didn't. They might have wanted to, but they didn't. They weren't able to. They weren't able to. And you could find that, you know, we don't have time to read everything, but if you look at source 4, source 5, you'll see that that is the basic reason, or source 4 anyway. I gave it to you from Rashi, a book of halacha called Siddur Rashi, but anyway. Some people have the minhag source 5, some people have the minhag 2, read the Haggadah, actually, on Shabbat at Mincha time. I don't know how many people have this minhag, but it's in the Siddur. That some people read the actual, most of the Haggadah, parts of the Haggadah at Mincha, because that was really when they left. That, remember, that was really, they left on Shabbat afternoon. That was really when the Yitziat Mitzrayim took place. So even though, of course, it can be any day of the week, this year it's, you know, Monday night is when we celebrate, you know, Seder. That's when, but really, it's, one second, really... they left them with... Now, it's very interesting. I don't want to go into it now, but just for you to think about, why is the day of the week? I gave a different year on this, a different year. Not to you guys, though. But Shabbat HaGadol, right? It happened on Shabbat. Okay, so who cares what day of the week it happened on? Purim might have happened on a Thursday. We don't celebrate it on Thursday every year. Why is the fact that Shabbat happened to happen on Shabbat so significant that we make it Shabbat HaGadol? So what? Make it, you know... Okay, the date usually matters more than the day of the week. Right? Usually the day of the week is less important than the date in Jewish history. For some reason, we care a lot about the day of the week. What was significant? I don't want to go into it now, but that's something interesting to think about. Yehuda.
Didn't Israel leave 4 days after they brought the Korban Pesach?
Yes, they left.
So
exactly.
So then how did they leave on Shabbos?
They took the... No, they didn't leave on Shabbos. I was wrong. They didn't leave on Shabbos. They took the lambs on Shabbos. You're right. They left 2 days later. Correct. I was wrong about that. But they took the lambs on Shabbat. That's true. Fair point. Golly?
I was going to say, maybe, to emphasize, how important it was, what they were doing, that it was Dochei Shabbos.
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe the fact that they're even not doing on Shabbos. Okay. That's interesting. Could be. Okay. So that takes us into Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach is probably, halachically, the busiest day of the year. Lots to do. We'll start with Bedikat Chametz. Okay? There are more mentions somewhere on this. Somewhere in this packet later, that you should really clean your house before you do Bedikat Chometz. I don't know if any of you do that. But
yeah.
Said there's a minhag that you should already have cleaned your house because Bedikat Chometz is, you know, not shouldn't be the first time you start cleaning. So I don't know if, yeah, I think most of us do that. He mentions that later on in passing. But you really should clean your house. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that if you clean too well, then Bedikat Chometz starts to be a joke, right? Bedikat Chometz shouldn't be a joke. It's a real search. You're really looking for any Chometz you might find. You should actually be looking for Chometz. There's a minhag that's brought here. Let's see. Well, let's see what he does have. Well, that's right. So the minhag about putting bread out. Does anyone know why? There's really more than one reason given, but any reason that we put out bread. Tova. Right, so very good. So your searching won't be in vain, which is unclear. So the bracha. You can search all you want, right? You can spend your whole day searching, but the bracha, which I think what Tova meant, the halachic search, I don't think she meant, meaning the bracha on the search, correct, the Rama says should not be in vain. You can see that here in source 9, Sif Aleph. Source 9, page 2. Kodem sheyatchil levdok, before you start to search, yivarech asher kashan v'zonim, al bi or chometz. What's strange about that? The bracha you make on the search is al bi or chometz. That's unusual. What is so strange about that, Rachel?
Because you're searching for chometz, not burning it yet.
Very good. So what are some reasons, and again, there's more than one given, but what are some reasons What? Why do you make a bracha al bi or chametz? He brings, I think, three right here on the spot here in source 9. Or in source 10. Actually, in source 10, the Mishnah Berurah brings these reasons. What are some reasons that you would make an al bi or chametz, not al bidika chametz? I think he brings three. Not a single boy knows. That's really rather a shame.
No,
Nachum. Oh, see him. Nachum.
It's because of what? Like, the Nachum said that you have to search during the night, and that you can also search during the morning, and then during
it,
so...
No, the search is really done at night, but... Search is really done at night. It's here in Source 10, you can take a look, if you want to check it out for yourself, and then answer. Liat.
What are we doing? How does that search for the beer of the Chametz the next day?
Search, right, in other words, the purpose of the search is for the beer, very good. That's one reason he gives. He says over here, thank you. Kevan de Vedika zo litzorech bi, or you're only searching, so you burn it. Right? There is a mitzvah to search your house, but that's not the end of the mitzvah, that's half a mitzvah. You've only done half. If you search for chumitz and then don't bother burning anything the next day, you have not really done the full mitzvah, you've done half a mitzvah. Right? The point of the search is also to burn. The point, right, they go together. It's like one half,
yeah.
One whole mitzvah with two halves. Right? It's one whole mitzvah with two halves. Bidika's half and beer is half. So there's no reason to make a bracha on the first half. That's one reason he gives. Okay, that's fine. That's one reason he gives. He gives a couple of reasons. So you make a bracha of beer chometz. He says over here in source... well, let's go back to the beginning of this. Source 6. It says, you should do it as soon as possible when the night of the 14th has arrived, right? You shouldn't wait and, you know, do lots of other things. You should try and do it right away. You should try and do it without any interruption. He goes on to say in source 8 that you shouldn't start any other work, shouldn't start eating before you search, right? You should start the search as soon as possible. Really, that's true of almost any mitzvah that takes place at night. It reminds me of the halacha about lighting Hanukkah candles. You shouldn't wait until, you know, whenever. It's possible to do it right away. That's always the best, always the preferred option. Always preferable to do it as soon as possible. He points out here as well that after you make the bracha, you should start the search immediately and not interrupt by doing anything. That's relatively easy. The harder one is what he says after that. This is all in source 9. This is source 9. It says, there's one that I've seen violated more often than I have not. It's a tough one. During the entire search, you should not interrupt or talk. However, it's very important to realize that there's an exception to that for things related to the search. You may absolutely talk if it's related to the search. You should try and do it without interrupting for casual conversation. But anything related to the search or related to Pesach itself, you may. So for example, you would say to someone in the family might say to you, are we going to close off this cabinet before Pesach, right? Talking about that's fine. Did we search in, you know, the living room yet, right? Anything like that, anything related, is this toothpaste chumitz, right? That's a good one, right? You have to find out to know if you want to, the whole point is to find those things out. So those are fine, but casual conversation, they try and avoid it. It should be a real search, as we said before. He says over here, interesting, I didn't know this, I hadn't seen this until last night, but he says you're in source 9. He says, Yamin bibnei beso etzlo b'shashu mevarech v'yispazru ish vimkomo al smach bracha shivarech balabais. In other words, you're allowed to send people all over the house with your bracha. So if you make a bracha al biyur chumetz, or your father makes the bracha al biyur chumetz, you can then send people to different rooms to do a search. You say, you know, I want Zev to go do his room and Tova to go do her room. That's okay. The person who makes the bracha does not have to do every room. Right, you can delegate people and base it on the original bracha. You don't have to go and do every room yourself if you're the one who made the bracha. That is not a problem. However, the search should be done at some point somewhere by somebody. Right, you can appoint people, but the whole house should be searched. Except, here's an important caveat to that. Important exception. Yeah.
Except for places that chometz
never goes. Right. Places where chometz never goes, and I'll give you an exception to this in a second, but places where chometz never goes. Can I have an example of chometz where place somewhere you never bring chometz? Never, ever. Kira.
Yeah.
The bathroom, right? You just don't bring chametz into the bathroom. Well, there's toothpaste, but that, but that, but you don't bring other. Meaning, you then you know where that chametz is. That's right. The toothpaste.
But also, but little kids in the house.
It could be little kids bring chametz, and it could be right. It might depend on your family and the ages of the kids in your family. If you have little kids, maybe you do want to check the bathroom. If you're older kids / all adults, you probably don't need to check the bathroom. Right, so it might depend on that. But you can make a choice by your family as to whether there's any chance at all that chametz was brought into that. Right, but he said he does point out here. Yeah, no, another exception.
A wine cellar.
What?
A wine cellar.
A wine cellar. Exactly. That's actually the Mishnah Berurah's exception. He says the wine cellar, right? Places the, you know, that room in the back of the basement that no one ever goes anyway. Something like that. You don't need to clean it. You don't need to search it. You can just assume there's no chametz. There's no reason to search for chametz that's not there. If you know there's no chametz, don't bother. But you do have to search every room that there might be. Now look at source 12 for a second. This is kind of a an exception to that. He says, right, Sheyesh lachu shemech. This is the Mishnah Berurah commenting on the Shulchan Aruch. So you see the bold is the Mishnah Berurah. Comment is the words of the Shulchan Aruch. And the Mishnah Berurah himself is not bold. So, but he says, afilu makom she'ein ragel l'shavish b'chametz kol hashana, rak sheyesh lachu shemech nisham chametz ba'akrai, gam kein sarach b'dika. Right, you do have to search places where there was only very rarely brought chametz into it. So if you don't think there's chametz in there, but you've brought chametz in a few times, then you should yes check. So it's not so much about thinking that there's ever been chametz brought into there. Well, no, it is about that. It's more about having the thought that there's ever chametz brought into there than the likelihood that there's chametz there right now. If you really don't think there's chametz in the room, but you know that you've brought chametz in every now and then you should yes check it. The only exception was when no chametz was brought in there to begin with. But if you say, well, yeah, I bring it occasionally, but I know there's none now, you should probably check. That's the Mishnah Berurah's rule of thumb. Right? So he's differentiating here between, I never bring chametz into there at all, that's source 12, versus, I do, I just don't think there's any chametz left. In the second case, you should actually check. Aaron. Oh, so then we're only talking about the last year.
When you check.
Correct, right. It's all in the last 12 months.
Yes.
Very good. If you convert right before Pesach, very good. Then you would.
That would be like you convert a week before Pesach.
Right. Well, you know.
That would be annoying.
Well, but see, that's an interesting question, Elazar. But the chometz that you brought in before you were Jewish is still chometz. You're still living now as a Jew in a house of chometz. So I think you would still have to check. Interesting question. Normally we say, right, it's once you convert, everything starts again, right? You've started your whole life again, which is true. However, in this case, the chometz, you're a Jew living in a house with chometz in it, you got to check. So I think that might be different. It's a good point, though. It's an interesting question. Wow. Yoda.
Also, converting takes a little bit of a long time, so
true.
You probably know in advance.
Yeah, it's true.
It takes at least a whole year so you can experience all the holidays.
There we go.
So you've already checked the
first. Right. Right, that's probably true, right? You probably have gone through it. You've gone through it already. Okay. Yeah.
What if you're like, I don't, we're doing this year, we're going to Baltimore on right before our
great.
So we're leaving Sunday, so we're not going to be able to do
great.
Because Sunday just gonna, night. And
excellent.
We're coming back for the second case.
Beautiful. So I was going to get to that in just a minute, so we'll do that now. If you are not going to be in town for Pesach, look at Halacha source number, it's a little bit later on, 17. We'll skip to 17 for now. Source 17, right, Liat's case, which my case as well. I'm leaving the Sunday before Pesach, and the question is, do you have to search your house? How do you have to? When do you have to? So he says like this in source 17. Yes, fine.
He says that if you leave 3 days before, then...
Very good. Wait, how many days?
You should check 3 days.
3 days, okay. Not exactly. Try that again. How many days?
30.
30, okay, that makes sense. Right, 30 days, so there's a 30-day rule. 30 days living in a place always means that you live in that place, right? The same thing applies to mezuzah. If you are living in a place for, like, camp is an example, where you don't have to put a mezuzah, sometimes they do anyway, you really don't have to put a mezuzah on the bunks because no one lives there for more than 30 days. And the camp session is always less than 30 days anyway. So you'll find in many camps they actually don't even put mezuzahs up. And it's true if you go anywhere for a few days or a couple of weeks, you don't have to put a mezuzah. The same thing is true over here. If you are going to be out of your house for less than 30 days, then you are still assumed to be living in your house and you have to check, right? So if you leave 30 days or less beforehand, you have to do the check. The night before, he says here in source 17, the night before you leave, you should check. And that's true, he says, whether you're planning to come back, like in Liat's case, for the second days, or whether it's true, like in my case, I'm not coming back till after Pesach is completely finished. It doesn't matter. You still have to check. You have to check if you're leaving your house within 30 days, whether you are going to be back during Pesach or after Pesach, or even not for a long time after Pesach, he says. Mishnah Berurah says, even if you're not going to be back for 6 months after Pesach. Ah, so if you're never going to be back ever and you've really moved, good question. If you completely, it's not your house anymore. Right, if you, yeah, people do it. People do it. People often do. Very good. People often do. But if you're going to be gone for more than 30 days afterwards, that's an interesting question. Or if you're going to, not sure. I'll have to get back to you. And that was an interesting question. If you're completely moving, do you have to check the house that you've lived in all that time? We have Ilan, then we have Gabi. Ilan.
So what if you leave 31 days before?
Right.
And then you stay until after Pesach. Would you have to clean the house that you're going to?
No. That's a good example. If you leave... Oh, that's you're going to, yes.
Yeah.
That you have to check because you'll be in there for Pesach.
Okay.
But your original house, that your main house, you wouldn't have to check. If you left 31 days before and you came back after Pesach, your original house, is not. It's like it doesn't belong to you, right? You were not there 30 days. You didn't live there. So you have no requirements over that house. You have no, got it.
So,
1 second, we have to wait a second. We have to wait a minute because people are not giving you all the respect that they should. Got it.
So you only have to check it 30 days. So if you leave less than 30 days, you have to check it?
Exactly. So if you leave less than 30 days before, you check the night before with a bracha, by the way.
I don't know how long I'm going to be gone.
So he says, interesting. So he says, Im dai tolach sur mitocha Pesach. Oh, 1 second. That's a different question. Oh, okay. So one thing at a time. So Shimi's question. If you don't know when you're coming back, you should probably assume you'll be back in enough time that you should check. I would assume you should check. Right. Right. Now, Gali's question.
What if you're leaving like more than 30 days before Pesach, but you're coming back in the middle of the bowl?
Exactly. Right. Look at the middle of Source 17, Sif Bet. In the bowl. Navalim dai tolach or betocha Pesach. If your intention is to come back on Pesach, then tzarich livdok afilu meirash hashana. Then you should check even 6 months before, right? Because you're going to come back to a house with chametz in it. So there you could do the check. There you should do the check even, you know, who knows, 6 months before or whatever, a year before. But there there's no bracha. There's no bracha on it before 30 days before. The bracha is only on doing it 30 days or less because that's your house. Now you need to do a check. If you're leaving beforehand and coming back on Pesach for practical reasons, you don't want to come back to a house with chametz in it. But you don't have to make a bracha because it's not a halachic check, right? It's a practical check. At that point, it's not a halachic check.
But if you're leaving on 30 days before, but you're not staying in one spot over that whole 3 days,
right. Like
for 3 days you're staying at like your uncle's house, and then the next 3 days
right.
You're staying in the cousin's house.
Right.
Not certain, the next 3 days, and you go visit 10 different places over the course of these 30 days. Do you need to clean anywhere?
Well, there's two places you might have to clean. You might have to clean your original house, and you might have to clean the place you're staying for Pesach. The places you go in the middle, you don't have to clean, because that's not your, that has neither your main house nor your Pesach house. So no. Somewhere you go for 3 days between, you mean within the month before Pesach?
Going away for a month.
Right. What? Which month? Which month?
Part of that month is Pesach.
Okay, part of the month is Pesach.
So you're visiting
10
different people, so 3 days you're at one spot, 3 days you're at another spot. So over the course of Pesach, you're at a couple of different places.
Right. So the place you're at, right before Pesach, you're saying, what if you're going to be at a place in the middle of Pesach, and you can't necessarily get there to Pesach? Interesting question. One second. First, we have to wait for some more people to give Tova the respect that she deserves in asking a question. That's number one. So I'd say this, you should probably try and get someone to do the check. You don't have to do your own check anyway. Even if you're in your house for Pesach and you're there and you're never leaving, you still don't have to be the one to do the check. You can appoint someone else to do it. That's always okay anyway. So I would say in that case, you can't do all those checks. Right? If each day of Pesach you're going to be in two places, right? You're on a whirlwind tour, right? All over the country. And you're going to be in 16 places on Pesach. You can't really check them all before Pesach. So you're right, it's an interesting question. I mean, I'm exaggerating it, but that's the problem. Okay, but the point is, if you are going to be in more than one place, you should have someone check each place, whether it's you or somebody else. Which brings up the point, one second, I see hands, but one second, that you should also make sure that schools are checked, they check here, shuls, all places, cars, the minhag gets to check, not sure why, it's supposed to be somewhere where there's a dira, apartments, I didn't mean to say apartments. Stores he brings up here. He brings up, what was I going to say? Shops, businesses, offices is the word I was looking for. Offices, right? Things like that should be checked. Those are considered a dira, somewhere where you live, and anywhere you live should be checked. Cars, I don't know why. It's minog. You don't live in a car, but that's definitely what you do. Anyway, whatever. That's the minog. Sam.
Can something be checked by a non-Jew?
To be checked by a non-Jew. This is an interesting question. Can you appoint a non-Jew to check? I think so. I don't see why not. It's really just a check. I don't know. Let me see. Does he talk about that? He talks about appointing a shliach, someone else to do it for you.
Yeah. Hmm. You are allowed.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see why it would be a problem.
Right,
you can say a bracha probably, but that's not the main part of it. The main part of it is the search. I mean, it's not a mitzvah for him, so you got it done, the search done that you needed to, and there was no bracha required because the non-Jew did. So I think so. I'm not passing this. Interesting question. I think so. I don't see why not. There's so much to do. Oh my goodness. Wow. Write down your questions. So even if I don't get to you now, I want to hear your questions afterwards because we still have days to talk. So if I don't get to you right now, make sure you write it down so I can answer your question later. Because I'm sure these are great questions, just so much to cover in so little time. sorry. But write it down. Write down your question. Can't call on everybody. Important halacha here in source 11. Ein bodkin l'or halavana. Don't rely on the moonlight. Now, why is he saying that? The reason we do it at night, first of all, it's very important to be at night. Even if you're leaving 2 weeks before, or a few days before Liat's case, or you're leaving a few weeks before, maybe the Beans case, or leaving very, ish tomorrow, right? Even while you're leaving early, you should still do it at night before you leave, not during the day. Why is night so important for the search? What is this thing about night? Always at night. Always do it at night. Unless it's 2 months before or something. But basically, you should try and do it at night. Why? Abi.
That way the light stands out.
Very good. Because if you do it during the day, let's say I tried to do a search right now in this room. It's hard to look for it. It's hard to know what I'm looking for because there's so much light. I mean, even if we turned off these lights, there's so much light from the sun, right, that it's hard to really search for anything. You're just looking all over the room. You're not searching at that point. You're just kind of looking around. The advantage of night in terms of the search is that because there is no natural light, you can really focus on one area. You're really searching. That's called a search. You're really looking with the candle or the flashlight. We'll get to that in a minute. But you're searching with whatever object you're using to search for those things is much better. Having said that, there's a different problem with light, and the halacha accounts for this. If you look in source 11, he says, "Ein bodkin l'or ha'avuka." Don't use a havdalah candle. Don't use a torch. Because an avuka is a torch. And he says, a havdalah candle, pluim, things tied together. You shouldn't use more than one wick, more than a one-wicked candle. Why is that? Can't use a havdalah candle. Why? Why is that? Right? There's kind of a two double-sided coin here. On the one hand, you want to do a search, but Ozzy?
Because the havdalah candle has more than one wick, okay. And regular candle has one wick. So you want to use a one-wick candle.
Why?
So
that's just the point we wanted to. Good. So the answer is that, ironically, as much as we want you to use light, we're scared if there's too much light, you're going to burn something. You're not going to do a good search because you're going to be scared you're going to burn your coat if you're looking in the coat closet with a Havdalah candle. Too much light. It's like you want just the right amount of light. Right? There's if there's too much light from the outside, you can't see anything, so you use a regular candle or flashlight. Some poskim prefer a flashlight, really, for this exact reason. The exact reason that a flashlight is perfect, says some.
Flashlight, you can point it.
Exactly. You can point it exactly where you want it to be, but it's not going to burn anything down. You can't burn anything with a flashlight. So a lot of rabbis, a lot of poskim actually prefer flashlights, and then there's poskim who say, yeah, but we've been using candles for thousands of years, nobody's house is burned down, don't make changes. So that's, you know, not for me to decide on right now. But anyway, you can see it either way. Certainly, anywhere where you're scared that you won't do a good search with a candle, I think any posek would say use a flashlight. Almost any posek. They would say, well then, yeah, if you're scared of, you know, burning something for real, if you're really scared of it, then use the flashlight, for sure. Right? If there's an area where it's just, you know, too hard to get in, then for sure use a flashlight. The question of whether you use a flashlight, in most cases, that's really up for debate. I don't want to
use a strong flashlight. Would you?
What do you mean?
Could you use a very strong flashlight?
Why not?
Because you said that you don't want so much light, you want to just focus on one spot.
True, if there's a huge flashlight, it might get into the too much light issue. You might not be searching anymore, that's true. But we're thinking of a small one. Elon?
What? If you're searching, could you use like a Hanukkah candle or a Shabbos candle?
Yeah, Shabbos candle is perfect, right? Typically, people will use a Shabbos candle. There's also this minhag, I don't know where it started, to use a feather and a spoon, and then you put it on, which gets into the 10 pieces issue, right? If you're searching and there are 10 pieces in the house, then you can actually, you know, take the pieces, put them in the bag, and, you know, burn them the next day. But remember, as I said before, and this must be remembered, you're not searching for those 10 pieces. Those 10 pieces are to indicate whether your search was good because you found them, and so you obviously did a good search in general. But it wasn't the search for those pieces. The search is not for those 10 pieces of bread, if you even put them out. Some people don't. The search is not for those pieces. Those 10 pieces are to say, wow, I think I've done a good search, and I found 3 pieces. Have I done a good search? Probably not. Right, so that's the point of the 10 pieces, but not because of those 10 pieces. It's more of an indicator of whether, in general, you did a good search. That's the point of the 10 pieces, not just to find those pieces, but to show you, oh, you know what? I don't think I searched well enough yet, because I thought I did, but here I'm sitting here with half the pieces I put out. Clearly I didn't, which is why minhag is that other people should put the pieces out instead. If you put them out and then you search, that's a joke, right? Clearly you've justified. It becomes like, well, I mean, you don't know if you did a good job at finding the pieces because you're the one who put them out. That's just, that's like chasing your own tail, right? But so it's actually the minhag of, you know, children putting it out or something like that is probably fine. Elon.
Why 10?
I don't know if there's a specific reason for 10. I don't know if that matters so much. Not sure. I mean, halakhically, there's not. I've heard that there are deeper Kabbalistic reasons behind putting out pieces anyway, so maybe 10 relates to that. But then, I mean, it says that Mishnah Berurah, there's other reasons based on Kabbalah to put out pieces, even if you, right? We said before, we said that putting out pieces is because you're afraid of making a bracha levatala. I think someone over there said that. That you don't want to make a bracha in vain about it. But then other people say, yeah, but the point of the search is not necessarily to find chumis. The point of the search is to
search.
So even if you don't put out pieces and you don't find anything, it wasn't a bracha levatala. That's the other, right? So there's been a kind of a debate for thousands of years, really, about this issue. Fascinating question about the 10 pieces. Is it a bracha levatala? Is it not because the mitzvah wasn't to find pieces? The mitzvah was to search for pieces. Putting stuff out that you put out to find is like not really finding chametz anyway. You knew that it was there. So it's still a bracha levatala, maybe. Because you knew that it was there. It's only there because you put it there. So that's not. Is that even really finding anything? I don't know.
Yeah, it's like you're finding stuff that you put.
Yeah, so. But it's fun. It's fun for the kids. So.
Our father puts it out.
Yeah,
oh, so that's
in the meantime,
okay.
Interesting.
Oh, very good. That's an interesting minhag. That the father puts them out and the kids search while the father searches. Very good. Very nice. Keeps the kids occupied so that they don't bother him during the search. Carmiel.
Well, also, what God said that he put it somewhere and it's like you're just looking for the things you put there.
Right.
Right. You still put it there sometime.
Well, exactly. The possibility that you might, so you're in the no pieces camp. You're in the you have the opinion not to put out pieces, because you might find chametz, right? Who knows, right? The fact that you might find a Cheerio hiding under your couch cushion is enough of a reason to, right? Which is why your search, all your cleaning all month should be good, but not that good, right? Because if it's so good, I guess you're too good. It should be good. But if it's too good, then your vidikat chametz is a joke. I know there's no chametz in the house, right? If you, but anyway, the search is still a search. Even if you're absolutely positive that there's no chametz in the house, and even if you don't put out pieces, you should still make a bracha and still search, because the bracha is to search for chametz. Even if you know there's no chametz, it's still a mitzvah to search for chametz. Just the way it is. Just waiting for a few people on my left to be. Okay. Yes.
The searching and the burning of the TV. So if you don't put out pieces which enable you to burn chametz, then isn't the bracha, there's no point in saying the bracha, because the bracha is for burning them. And if you're doing, because what you're saying, that this is not, the bracha isn't necessarily only for the search.
Right, bracha is al bir chametz. Right, bracha is al bir chametz. Even if you don't find those pieces, you have to burn something the next day. We'll get in a minute to bir chametz, but you have to burn something. And you always have to burn something the morning after, which gets us into bir chametz. So let's look a little at that. Okay, so you have to burn chametz. And not only that, but the Rama says over here, I know I see, please write down questions, so even if I don't get to you, because I can't call on everybody, we would never get anywhere. Please write down questions, because we're running out of time and so much to talk about. Bir chametz, you burn the chametz the next day. There's two mitzvot. There's a mitzvah to search for chametz. That's probably rabbinic. It's probably a derabbanan. But then there's a diaraita to burn, to destroy your chametz. Right? The halacha, the pasuk in Shmos says, or pasuk in, I think it's in Shmos, says you're supposed to destroy your chametz. Pasuk with the word tashbisu in it. You're supposed to destroy chametz. So even if you didn't put out, even if you have no chametz left, what do you do, right? That's an interesting question. You're supposed to burn your chametz the next morning. What do you do? So actually, it's interesting. Do you have? There's a question in halacha. I saw this last week. Do you have to go out, in Piskei Tshuvot, do you have to go out and buy chametz for the sake of burning it? I have nothing left. I did such a good job with my cleaning and my bedika, and I have nothing left in the house. Do I have to go out to the store, buy a loaf of bread, and then burn it?
Wouldn't you already or is that, have some left over that you cleaned up? Like,
you should save some. Like, but let's say you threw it all out, or you didn't. You're a vegetarian. You never had chametz. Yeah, I don't know.
Vegetarian. That doesn't mean that you wouldn't have any chametz.
Okay, fine.
That would mean that you have.
Maybe you're gluten free.
Maybe I knew that and it woke you up. But anyway,
maybe gluten free.
Yeah, maybe you have celiac.
Maybe you're, what if you don't have chametz anywhere? There is a bread shortage and a bagel shortage. There's nothing. You're allergic to it. You're allergic. Do you have to? That's a question that they debate. Again, the post can talk about that. Do you have to go out and burn it? Is it what's called a mitzvah kiyumit? A mitzvah that you fulfill if you had chametz, but you don't have to find create chametz to do it? Or is it a mitzvah chiyuvit, that you have an obligation to begin with to find it, to burn it? That's a question that I will leave open. It's an interesting question. I'm not going to decide that this minute. Again, you've got to make sure you write down these questions. I see lots of great questions. I wish I could answer.
I want that question.
But anyway, burning the chametz. You can really burn it. The truth is, you can burn it, Elon, right after the... it's a good question. Elon's question was right. Why do you burn it in the morning? Why not burn it right away? You just did the bedika at night. At night you did the bedika. You did the, by the way, the bitul chametz I didn't even talk about. You're supposed to say, kol chamir v'chamiya, any chametz I have should be... So burn it, right? Why do you wait till the next day? So you can see in source... the time... 22... Source 22... Verse 22, I think he talks about it. He says the best reason to do it in the day is because it's similar to what's called notar, which is a different issue. I don't want to get into notar now, but there's other things that it's better to do it in the day. Similar to notar, the fifth hour, because again, the Korban Pesach was brought in the sixth hour, so you can no longer eat chametz then. So if that's when you can no longer eat chametz, so you burn it right before. So the actual calendar, you can see this on the front page of your packet, on the cover of the front page of your packet, you'll see there's a little chart. Eating chametz you should do by the beginning of the fifth. You should no longer eat chametz. The deadline for eating chametz is the beginning of the fifth halachic hour. I think everyone in here has, we talked before at some point about Shaud Zmaniot. There's an incredible amount of disrespect on my left. That's really becoming intolerable to me. I'll have to start meeting out consequences for it. It's extremely rude, and these are halachot you need to know anyway. You are no longer allowed to eat chametz after the fifth hour of the day, the fifth halachic hour, right? You take the sunrise, the sunset, divide into 12. We've talked about that before. I'm sure you've talked about that at some point. So the beginning of the fifth hour, which this year in Denver is about 10:21, although there's different ways of measuring it, but Star K says 10:21. That's what we'll go with for now. That's when you can no longer eat chametz. If someone else tells you a different time, that they might be right. But I saw on a few websites different times, and I don't want to get into it. Different opinions. Magen Avraham and the Gra, not for you. Everything else you see here should be done by the beginning of the sixth hour. Burning it, saying the second bitzel chametz is done in the morning, the second kol chamira. Benefiting from chametz, which is different than eating chametz. You have an extra hour that you can still feed your dog, you can still benefit from the chametz. You have one extra halachic hour for that. Selling the chametz, which we'll get to in a minute. Maybe we won't. But anyway, those should all be done, most of those, by the end of the fifth hour / the beginning of the sixth hour, in the order on the left side of that chart. So the chart that you have on the front page of the packet has the order that they're listed in is correct. Not really going to call anyone, so you might as well write down your questions and put down your hand. Not to say, not a lot of time. About 5 minutes to cover a lot of stuff, so write stuff down. I'm really not going to call on anybody at this point. My apologies, dude. I wish I could. Okay, so that takes care of the anything else about the burning. The minhag is really to burn it. You're allowed to destroy it any way you want. You could flush it down the toilet, throw it into an ocean, but the minhag is to burn it. Also, similar to Nosa. Burning is fun anyway, exactly. Yosef Chaim is definitely correct. Mishnah Berurah says it's more fun, and that's why you should do it. It doesn't really say that, but... Okay. Anything else here as far as... Right, there's two different times as far as eating and enjoyment, I just said. You can't eat chametz after the fifth hour of the day, but you have till the sixth hour of the day as far as enjoying the chametz. Really, the end of the sixth hour is the real media raita, that's the time. However, they put it back 2 hours because of, Mishnah Berurah says, because the days were cloudy and it's unclear, you don't want to mess up with eating chametz, or you don't want to mess up on that one. So they pushed it back 2 hours, but they didn't push it back when it came to getting enjoyment from it. They were more lenient on that, so you can still feed your dog chametz for an extra halachic hour. But eating it, they said, whoa, what if the day is cloudy and you think it's 6 hours and it's really 4 hours, or you think it's 4 hours, really 6 hours, and you eat chametz, that's not good. We don't want to do that. So they pushed it back 2 hours, so you'd be sure not to eat chametz on Erev Pesach. But for sure, Erev Pesach in the afternoon, after 6 hours, even 4 hours, 5 hours, you really cannot eat chametz at all. Okay. Next issue that has to be taken care of on Erev Pesach. We did Bediko, we did Bittel, we did Biur, we did the second Bittel. The next issue is Mechira. Now, Mechirat chametz, selling chametz, which we have to understand the background, and we will. But that we think of as something that we do this week, and that's true. There's two parts. We sell our chametz to the rabbi in town this week-ish, right? Hopefully not next Sunday morning at 10. That would be a bad time to do it. The sale of chametz, that's not really a sale, though. That all that is telling the rabbi that you want him to sell your chametz to a non-Jew. But that's not actually a sale. That's more of a filling out a paper telling him that the sale takes place between the rabbi and the non-Jew who he does it with. That should take place this coming Sunday morning at 11:28. And it shouldn't be too much earlier. Hopefully your rabbi won't do it too much earlier, because once he does it, you can't eat chametz anymore. So if he did it today to be, you know, extra strict, you couldn't eat your chametz for the next 4 days. So it should be done this coming Sunday morning. But you telling the rabbi that you want him to sell your chametz should be done much earlier than that. Okay? If you have chametz, your family / you should tell the rabbi that you want him to sell it to a non-Jew, you know, as soon as possible, right?
So you can find a non-Jew, and once you give it to him, you can...
Right, well, you know, all the rabbis in town have a non-Jew they use. What happens is like this.
They use...
Well, for this purpose.
But we use peace.
What?
But we use peace.
I have no idea what we could be. I don't know what we do. But generally, there's one non-Jew in town or two that really have the market on this. So what is this? What is this Mechirat? What is Selling Chametz? So you can find this. The original source for this is a Mechaber in Source 25. Source 25. We're making our way through this. Source 25. Sif Gimel Chametz Shel Yisrael Shover Lava Pesach Aser Bahana Apilu Hini Choshogeg Onetz. Chametz which you didn't sell, we'll start backwards. Right, we'll do this in reverse. Chametz which was not sold, chametz which sat in your house during Pesach, a loaf of bread, you either didn't sell it or you didn't care, you didn't realize it, but you found after Pesach a loaf of bread in your house was not sold to a non-Jew, then you have to, very good, you have to burn it after Pesach. That's called chametz she'avar alav ha-Pesach, chametz which Pesach passed over it, meaning that you are not allowed to eat or get any enjoyment at all out of that chametz until the end of time. It must be burned. That is chametz which must be burned. However, he says right here, well, there's a way out of that. He says like this, Imachro o nasno le'eno Yehudi, if you sell or give, interesting, or give, o nasno, le'eno Yehudi, to a non-Jew, shemichutz le'bayis, will be outside of your house, kodem Pesach, before Pesach, you sell it before Pesach, Afal pi, says the Mechaber, Shaha Yisrael machro le'eno Yehudi bi'adua bo, shlo yigabo klal. Even though you know the non-Jew is not going to really touch it, even though you know he's not going to show up in your house and eat the chametz, nevertheless, he says, mutzer, he says it's fine, as long as it's really a sale or a real acquisition by him. Now, having said that, if it's not a real sale, then you can't, it doesn't work. There's a difference between a permanent sale and a real sale. A permanent sale would mean that he really believes that he's going to have it forever. That would be wonderful, except you're never going to eat your chametz again, and we do want you to get your chametz back. So that is not necessary. What you do need to have is, for the 8 days of Pesach, a real sale, or a real acquisition by him, a real gift, is fine. What he says after this is, a matana al minat lahachzir, a gift which is given on the exact condition that I'm going to get it back, is not okay. So it's a little tricky, right? It has to be a real acquisition or a real gift, but not something that you know you're going to get back. On the other hand, you're allowed to get it back. Because there is no, and I know it sounds like a loophole, but there's no prohibition of owning the chametz for most of the year.
So does that mean you're giving it to them and saying, here, eat it,
yes.
But I want whatever's left.
Exactly. So you sell your chametz, you tell your rabbi that you want him to sell the chametz to a non-Jew. When, right? We don't do it today to every non-Jew we see. It's done generally now on one, you know, we fill out forms. The rabbi has hundreds of forms from everybody in town, gives all those forms to the non-Jew with a large amount of money. And the sale goes like this.
He gives him.
Yeah, it's a sale.
But so rabbi, is the non-Jew pay
it?
Does it pay it?
So is there, the way we do it practically today, is there actually money that trades hands? And the answer to that is no. What's done today, generally, and there might be different ways of doing it, but what's generally done today, whether you like this or not, halachically, whether you think that this fulfills this requirement of there not being any tanai, any condition, but what's done generally today is it says when he makes the sale, quote-unquote sale, to the non-Jew, that this is a sale on the condition that we can pay you back some ridiculous amount, $100 million, that you know you can't pay, that you might be able to pay, by the end of Pesach. Now, assuming you can't come up with that money, which is generally what happens immediately after Pesach?
They give it back.
It goes back to the Jew, because we couldn't produce that amount of money that, to be honest with you, we knew we couldn't pay anyway. Whether you think that works or not halachically is up to you. A lot of people don't sell chametz for that reason, or just because the whole idea of selling chametz has been kind of since it came up, the Rishonim talk about it, selling chametz. The Rabbi talks about it. But one second, hold that question. But even since the Rishonim talk about it, it's been a debate for thousands of years. Can this really work? Is this really a tenable situation to give to sell your chametz? You're supposed to burn your chametz, right? So you're not, there's no mitzvah to sell your chametz. On the other hand, we live in societies where there's so much food that, you know, it's very hard not to have any chametz, you know, that you still need to sell. So there's different opinions. Most people, I think, especially in this country, do sell chametz. A lot of people, I'd say, especially in Israel, don't sell chametz. In Israel, a lot of people don't sell what's called chametz gamur. Chametz gamur means a loaf of bread, a bagel, right? That's chametz. As opposed to what's called ta'aroves chametz, something with chametz in it, that might... Peanut butter, is it chametz? Well, we treat it like chametz. It might have been on the same factory floor as chametz, but I don't know if it's really chametz. So you might sell that. Most people would sell that. You might sell, what's another example? Apple juice, I don't know. Something that we treat it like chametz, but it's really not chametz. That, I think, everybody would sell. The idea of selling bread and bagels, you know, that's not so clear. Selling toothpaste, you can do, right? We treat it like chametz sometimes, but it's not chametz. There's no wheat in it. We treat it like chametz. But, that I think everybody says we can sell. Oh, I love so many questions. I wish I could answer. But the idea of selling bread and bagels and things like that, you know, that's more sketchy. Some people do. Many people do, especially in this country. And if that's your minhag, do it. There are other people who say maybe better not to. But either way, you should have something to burn, right? The burning of chametz is not a mitzvah to burn the 10 pieces of bread that you served for the night before. The point is to burn your chametz, right? So you should have something to burn. If you have nothing to burn, then the sale was like, took away your mitzvah to burn your chametz. Your mitzvah to burn your chametz, not to sell it. But I understand that, you know, to have such a huge monetary loss with big families and big houses, it's very hard to not, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just pointing out that there are these different opinions when it comes to selling chametz. I also want to say about selling chametz. You should sell, he says, Sam. You don't have to, but that's really the minhag. And it's important because I don't think, in theory, you could. In theory, if you have an extra neighbor and you want to sell your chametz to the non-Jew, I don't see any problem with it. The minhag is developed, I think, because it just wasn't nice to have every Jew running around. It has to be done correctly. Jews may not do it correctly, so better let the rabbi handle it. So that's definitely the minhag that developed. But in theory, yeah, if you have a non-Jewish neighbor and you want to sell your chametz, nothing really wrong with that. The point is just that it's not in your ownership over Pesach. Once you sell it to him, you can be in your house behind a cabinet that's taped up because you don't own it. It's in your house. It's like if you buy someone a bike, I don't know, something as a gift, a bike, and then you have it in your house and it's really theirs. It's theirs. You're just watching it. You can't ride it. You can't use it. That's true, right? You're not supposed to use someone else's stuff unless you ask them permission. So even though it's in your house, you can have something in your house that doesn't belong to you. That's what's going on here. You have in your house chametz, it doesn't belong to you, so that's considered a sale, or that's considered a valid way of getting it out of your hair. It's not really a problem, but there are others who say, yeah, but you knew that wasn't a good sale, you knew you were going to get it back. Right? So there's all different opinions about mechirat chametz, but in general, people do it. It's fine. It's perfectly fine. I'm just pointing out that there's a valid way of pointing out, a valid reason to say that selling your chametz is, I would at least say, don't go out 2 days before Pesach and buy, you know, grocery carts full of chametz, of donuts and bagels, and then say, oh, I'll just sell it, right? I'd say buying something with the intent to sell it, then you for sure know you're getting it back. I don't. But if you have something lying around, you sell it, I understand. Aaron.
We're really out of time.
Selling to a Jew, interesting question. So he points out here, it actually is an interesting case. I know that I've told this a couple times recently. I'll just wrap up with this. The last thing I'll say, and then please write down your questions, I'll answer in a minute. We'll finish with this, because we're really over time.
What about the final question?
Oh, we'll do the final question in a minute too. because Shimmy doesn't have enough candy. Good, so there's an interesting case, Aaron, that came up a few years ago in Israel. There was a guy who was like the guy to sell your chametz to. Like all the yeshivot sold to this guy. Right. I told you this. I told 7th grade this. And the newspapers caught up with this guy and said, why is this so important to you? Why do you want to be the guy that everyone sells chametz to? And he said, well, you know, it's part of my heritage too. It's also, you know, I'm also Jewish. And they're like, what? I said, yeah, well, you know, I'm Jewish. I'm just not observant. So it's important to me to be part of, to help the Jews out. So they said, wow, that's a very big problem. So they had been selling all these years, all the yeshivot had been selling chametz to a Jew. So at that point, it became a whole issue. Was it considered, right? What's the issue? At that point,
that if... you're giving chametz to Jews.
Right, well, that's one issue. But think about it this way. It doesn't matter, like, all the bread and bagels, because those are probably rotten and thrown out. But all the pots and pans that you sold to him had chametz she'avar alav ha-pesach in them, and really should be... Well, you should at least have to do hagala. You have to do... I can talk about that now, how to kosher your kitchen for Pesach, a whole different year. But at least you should have to get new pots or re-kosher these pots and pans and silverware. But, so that's a debate. I think each yeshiva decided for themselves. Or the question really is, this Jew considered himself basically not Jewish. Not, he didn't care. So do we say, well, that's his decision and we'll go with that? Or do we say, no, a Jew is a Jew. We don't consider that. So that's a debate that each yeshiva decided on their own.
Just sell him chametz because he thinks
He, you know, he cashed in on his Judaism for a little while, and that's his choice.
That's his choice, of course. But we shouldn't, like, help him be not Jewish.
Correct. That's that. So I see which side of the debate you're on. I agree with you. I agree. Right, it's not ours to decide. Oh well, he doesn't want to be right. You wouldn't give, just like on Shabbos, you wouldn't give a non-observant Jew something and say to drive, tell him to drive somewhere. Right, you wouldn't do that either. Right, we don't do that either. Right,
even if they don't
correct. Correct. Okay. So those are some of the major issues. Just skimming the surface. There's so much here. You can continue to look through it. Continue to and if you want to review, by the way, I just recorded this. I have a blog. I'm going to put it on my blog, so you can also review it that way. And you can continue to review these. There's a lot in here that's worth looking at, even if we didn't have time for it today. The final question. Oh, what's the blog? Rabbi Zalish, one word, .wordpress.com. RabbiZalish.wordpress.com. It's actually my blog. I don't do much with it, but occasionally I put up audio things.
RabbiZalish.wordpress.com.
Good. Wow, I'm going to have more than zero visitors. I check sometimes. It's always zero. And then I had one visitor, and I was all excited. And then my mom calls me the next day. She's like, I saw you have a blog. I'm like, oh, God, my mom? Are you kidding me? I thought somebody visited my blog. And it's my mom. Anyway, that was terrible. Terrible. But maybe I'll have like 3 or 4. Okay. So this.
Your blog.
Yeah. So you have all the
yeah. Yeah. I'm going to ask a question for the large candy bar. What we'll do is we'll allow 3 tries for this.
Read
the nutrition facts.
Don't call them cheating. The serving and the calories.
Let's see. calories 5. Wow. 5 calories, 2 grams of fat.
How much is the serving?
No, that's the serving.
Ah, I changed the servings, rats.
What is the serving?
Oh, man.
How many servings?
30 grams of protein. This is
what's the serving?
This is like a health bar. This is a health bar. Wow. It's made of soy. It does have soy in it. Soy lecithin.
How much sugar does
it have? None. Whoever gets
I already coated it in broccoli, so you're good. It's a broccoli chocolate bar. It's a broccoli bar. It's a broccoli bar. Doesn't make it healthy. Broccoli is not healthy enough for you.
It is, but then you just add all the chocolate. It's not really healthy.
And also,
better than just the chocolate. Okay, we're very, very late. The question is as follows. But something that. Oh, I didn't even talk about that. Erev Pesach, we don't say Mizmor LaTodah because they didn't bring the Todah because it was had bread in it, so they didn't bring it on Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, no Mizmor LaTodah. I just saw that. How many prohibitions related to not eating chametz are there on Erev Pesach, and what are they? How many prohibitions related to the... Oh, I don't want to say that. Related to chametz, how many chametz-related prohibitions are there on Erev Pesach morning? How many chametz-related prohibitions are there on Pesach morning? Erev Pesach morning. Morning Erev Pesach, how many chometz related prohibitions are there, and what are they? It's also the question.
Wait, wait.
Oh, I said it also 10 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Liat.
Four.
What are they?
There's five. Eating chametz.
Okay.
Burning, bitchel,
benefiting,
good
chel. Selling chametz is not a chametz related prohibition.
Yeah, it is.
What a prohibition.
It's not prohibition.
Doesn't count. No.
There is three prohibitions. Having it in your midst.
Okay.
Benefiting it and eating from it.
Having it in your midst, having it in your house.
Benefiting
from it
and eating it.
And eating it. Yeah, we're going to take that. Very good. Not very good. That's a giant bar. A giant Rocco bar. Okay, please go to class immediately. Your 9:50 class begins now.